I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Monday game day in Kansas City. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. You guys can always interact with us, 913-586-7965. That is the Jays Southland Tow Service text line. You're gone for a couple days. What, did you do some baking, or you stealing all the Halloween candy from your kids? What, you were gone Thursday and Friday? Were you out trick-or-treating? What was going on?
I was not. I mean, I took my kids trick-or-treating. But all good outside of that. They got my kids, I don't think, fully understand how trick-or-treating work. The name of the game is acquire as much candy
right
as humanly possible. About halfway through, my son's like, this bag feels pretty full. I think I'm good. He was done.
All right.
And then he also asked, he's like, hey, I got a lot of candy. Can I just start giving them candy at the door? Like, he wanted to reverse
that.
The
would
roles.
Be interesting. Hand like, them the candy.
That's not really how it works either. And then my daughter got offered from one house. They said, hey, just take like a 5, 6, 7 pieces, whatever you want.
Yeah.
And plenty of candy. They're like, get in there. And she said, one's fine. I just took one, put it in her bag, and then moved on. I'm like, I don't think you get like, you're going to have so much more candy.
That's, but, that was, you know, does she know you're, she's eating into, you know, mom and dad's candy allotment too, because you're going to take a few of those. You might want to actually grab 5 or 6, because I'm taking some as well.
You know, get in
did
there.
Did you sort through? Did you get a couple for yourself? Were you able to go through
just,
the bag?
I'll just like take stuff out of a bag every once in a while. Nothing crazy. My kids are not organizers of their candy.
Okay.
They can't
so you're
get
still
through.
Digging through.
The whole Tapp family can't get through the amount of candy they got. I mean, some of that's just going to the dump. Like, we're not getting through that
just
amount
bring
of candy.
It to work. It's bring crazy. Some to work. Bring some to work.
That's fine. But, I mean, there's just no way we're getting through that amount. It's a crazy amount. It's like 2 gigantic bags full.
Good to have you back. It is a game day in Kansas City. Going to be rainy throughout the day off and on. It looks like going to be thunderstorms during tailgating for a lot of you that are heading out there to tailgate.
Sloppy game tonight.
Going to be a little sloppy. It sounds like it'll clear out for during most of the game, but it's obviously going to be somewhat of a factor. Could be a wet track, as the broadcasters love to say during the game. And so, of course, the game tonight right here on 96.5 The Fan. Pre-game coverage with Mitch Holthus, Dan Israel, Dane and Hughes, Josh Klingler begins at 4 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. What do you make of the Bucks? Let's just start right there, and I'll ask you guys on the text line too, because it's a Bucks team that was definitely scarier 3 weeks ago when they had a healthy Chris Godwin and a healthy Mike Evans, but they've still been scoring.
They got a fight.
You know, they've still been scoring. Baker Mayfield, give him credit, right? He continues. He has a brand new offensive coordinator this year. Now he's down a couple wide receivers, and they still put up points even in their loss last week to the Atlanta Falcons. They lose 31-26. They still, I mean, it was not an offense that couldn't do anything. They still put up 26 points in that game against the Falcons team that is in first place in the NFC South. Baker Mayfield still threw for 330 and 3 touchdowns. So it's an offense that can still score. My question for them is going to be, are the Chiefs going to be able to have one of those games where they just control it and run the ball throughout the entire contest? I know we want to see the wide receiver combination of Mahomes and Hopkins. We can get to that in a second, but
definitely
this is a Bucks defense that yards per carry, at least give it up, yards per carry, they are tied for the worst in football. Over 5.6, I believe, when I looked it up. 5.6 or so yards per carry is what they give up. This feels like a heavy Kareem Hunt type of game. Once again, 23-plus carries from him.
I think that I would expect some of that. Look, I think the Bucs are a good team. Decent defense. Baker Mayfield continues to play at a really high level. He's proven that he deserves to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. All those things. The problem with fearing them is not just that Kansas City's undefeated, but that as the season goes on, Kansas City's resume, like if you look at it from like a college football perspective, is beating a whole lot of teams a lot better than them. Okay? A lot better than Tampa Bay is as it currently sits. Baltimore is the 3rd seed right now, or 4th seed, depending on the tiebreaker between the Texans in the AFC. Cincinnati's a game back of 500. Atlanta's in first place in their division. The Chargers would be in a playoff spot if it started right now, like the 5th seed. They'd be like firmly in a playoff spot. San Francisco's only a game back in their division. I mean, like, for the most part, their resume's pretty good. I think the Bucs can get you if you let Baker Mayfield pick on your corners. And I'll be honest, for as much as we've talked about this in the trade deadline being tomorrow, it would be concerning if Baker got to take advantage of you tonight. With the cast of crew he's got to throw to, because I know it'll be a heavy dose of Kate Otten. That's fine.
That's every tight end.
Yeah, every tight end's got their numbers against Kansas City, so be it. But do the wide receivers take advantage of Kansas City's corners because the depth has been tested and Nazi Johnson left injured and Joshua Williams struggled a little bit? That would be the bigger concern for me.
Yeah, and I know the secondary looks a little bit different right now, Nazi Johnson being out on top of the Jalen Watson injury, but this is still a team that against number one wide receivers, and honestly, the Bucs don't have one. Like, they have a receiver that was technically their number one tonight, but they don't have one right now because of the injuries. The Chiefs have shut down number one. So do I think, is Jalen McMillan going to get after them? Is Trey Palmer, Sterling Shepard, I believe? Like, I believe those are the three receivers that really we're talking about. I don't, and I don't care. I've said it throughout the last month and a half. Tight ends, I do not care what Cade Otton does tonight. I did not care what Brock Bowers did. We didn't care what George Kittle did. They can get all the yards they want. It's good for your fantasy football team. It's good if you want to bet the over on Cade Otton tonight. 53 and a half yards. Keeps getting bet up, by the way, because the Chiefs give up about 80 yards to a tight end every week. Who cares? Who cares? Big plays, keep them out of the end zone. As long as you're not giving up two touchdowns to the tight end in the red zone, as long as you're not letting Bucky Irving run all over you, and, well, the Chiefs have one of the best rush defenses, as we know, in football. I'm really not that concerned. With that said, it's still a Chiefs game. I don't think they're winning by 20 points or anything. They're 9.5-point favorites. But this will be very similar, I think, to the last Monday Night Football game they played against the New Orleans Saints. It's a better Bucs team, but I could still see, with the weapons that don't exist right now for Tampa, I could still see this being a fairly comfortable game where the Chiefs put up, 26, 28 points, and the Bucs struggle to get out of the teens. Like, I think that's going to be the type of game it is tonight, knowing that the weather also could play a role in slowing this thing down.
I just don't think you can look at the Bucs and what they were at any one point and call them, like, Washington is a win they've gotten. They won at Detroit. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, they won against Philadelphia. Like, they have beaten some good teams. Their resume is impressive as hell, but
they had a healthy Godwin and Evans.
They had a healthy Godwin and Evans. They were still managed to put up, as you mentioned, 31 points on Baltimore. I still think they'll get some points tonight, but I think the biggest problem that they're going to have is they've been regularly scoring actually better than Kansas City on the season and better than Kansas City over the last month. Their biggest problem is they've been doing that via the rushing attack. They have been doing that versus Rashad White, the local kid, by the way. Great story up at the Star of how he grew up 5 minutes from the stadium but never got to actually go to Arrowhead because he couldn't afford a ticket.
I think he was there this summer back in town for a camp, if I'm not. I believe that we got an email about that.
But didn't actually get to go to Arrowhead to watch the Chiefs play because he couldn't afford the ticket. Now he's going to get to play against the Chiefs. But if your offense is built around the play action, run game, Bucky Irving and Rashad White, unless you're going to be the first offense this entire year to run the ball successfully against Kansas City, how are you getting enough points to do it? Look, they've lost two in a row, but they've averaged 29 points a game in those. They scored 50 the week before that, 30 the week before that. They're scoring 35 points a game over their last four. I definitely think they're capable of scoring. The problem is it's the way that they score. The most interesting thing tonight for me is DeAndre Hopkins, because that tells me where Kansas City is. DeAndre Hopkins, so like the whole undefeated conversation that we're saving until after the Bills game. If DeAndre Hopkins is the goods, well, then that's how they get there. Because if you made me guess right now, are the Chiefs going undefeated? I'd say no. I don't think it's an unreasonable stance. I'm sure they'll be called a hater.
How dare you?
Or whatever.
Yeah.
If you made me guess right now, I would not say the Chiefs are going to go undefeated. And part of that is because I still think that they've gone through two reinventions of their offense and might be facing down the barrel of a third. So I have high expectations for DeAndre Hopkins tonight. I want to see his role grow. I want him to prove that he's the number one wide receiver in this offense. He can still be weapon number two behind Travis Kelce. But this has got to be a big day for DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, look, so I mean,
not big, not 130 yards and a touchdown. Like,
look, I mean,
improvement.
Definitely would love to see him on the stage tonight to go out there and have five or six catches and 70-plus yards. That would be fantastic. But I don't think the performance tonight, if you tell me he has three catches for 50, if it changes my view on what he can be in this offense, it still is just game two. I think we're all expecting an uptick. He had, 28 snaps, something like that. Played a little bit more than we thought he would even against the Raiders out in Vegas and just had two catches. But the two catches he had where you just use the word like show that he's the goods. I already know he's the goods. I'm not worried about it. I already know that. You know?
Feel very confident.
Yeah, I already know that. I mean, he had 1,000 yards last year. I don't think he just fell off a cliff. I mean, I'm not worried. He had two catches that we haven't seen in this offense, just in terms of, you know, route running and the hands, right? The lack of drops that we've seen throughout his entire career. I already know he's the goods when it comes to that. So I want to see an uptick in production, but I don't think that will dictate whether the Chiefs, you know, win tonight or not, or anything like that. What I think tonight could change my thought on, like, if we get here tomorrow morning, the Chiefs, whether the Chiefs win or not by 10 or they lose, whatever, would be how does the secondary perform? Does that impact tomorrow's trade deadline? We'll get to some reports at 10:30 from Diana Rossini here in 20 minutes. But does tonight's performance in any way, whether it's, you know, positive, negative, whatever, does that impact what we think the Chiefs will or should do before tomorrow's 3 o'clock deadline?
It's hard because it's a good passing attack, but with no good weapons left in it. So, like,
but that's maybe if they somehow, like, out of nowhere, Jalen McMillan or whatever somehow
cooks
you for, you know, does that change your view if it's a rough go for a Josh Williams tonight?
Well,
I will say,
if I were the Buccaneers, if I were going into this and I were Todd Bowles, and they just said, hey, Cody, you've watched the Chiefs maybe even more than us. Not true, but you've watched the Chiefs so much this year. How do we win this game? In what way do we control it? And my answer would be pass. I'd say test the secondary because you're not going to win it doing it the way you've been winning. You have to adjust to your opponent sometimes. I know teams hate that. Teams hate to admit that. They're like, no, we do what we do. You're going to lose. I'll tell you right now, Bucks, if you try to go into this game running the way you run and think that's the path to victory tonight, it isn't. That's not going to get you there. If you're actually trying to beat Kansas City tonight, you should test their corners. You should test their corners deep and in the middle of the field and all these other areas because we have questions, but they haven't had to be tested because the pass rush has been really good and the run defense has been the best in the league. So nobody's had to put them to the test. Nobody's done that effectively really this year, except for maybe in the early when, you know, like the Ravens in week 1, which feels like a million years ago. Maybe that. So, like, yeah, I would say air it out. But my guess is that teams will come in and they'll try to run against Kansas City, which will get you nowhere but behind the sticks and down in the game.
The first drive is so telling to me because we know where the Chiefs can be had sometimes defensively is the first drive. So if the Bucs on their first drive do not march down the field, then I know it's going to be a long night for Tampa because the one thing that teams have done against this defense that's been so good is the first 15 scripted plays against them. And then Spags adjust, and then good luck. But if the Bucs can't go down the field on their first drive and get points, and I'll say a touchdown for the matter for the sake of this conversation,
field goal's kind of a loss for them.
Then I think they're done. Like I know it's like oversimplifying, but truly, like if you can't get them when they're most vulnerable, and other teams have, then you have no chance to win this game tonight. I really think the first drive is. A lot of people would disagree with me, but the first drive is very telling for me tonight. If the Bucs cannot score on their first drive, then why do I think it's going to get any better than them for them the rest of the night? Usually the adjustments come and teams get into some real tough spots offensively. And so you got to get them on the first drive.
I know we're going to talk about the Michael Wacha deal here in just a minute, but there are like 10 texts talking about what happened with you and Bink last week.
Well, you
the
were
hell's
gone,
going so on?
You missed a lot.
There are like 10 texts that said the show got really horny. There's a lot of accusations over the text line between what took place while I was gone.
You were gone Thursday and Friday and Bink turn it up a notch, man. He turned it up a notch. There's
so
probably
attacking Vern.
5 new drops in the system. Some people really liked it. There were some people that were very upset with Bink. We had a listener on Friday say, Bink, you need to calm down. Brought him in some alcohol, which I think had the reverse effect. So there was a lot going on. Yeah, I mean, you haven't heard. I mean, I don't want to play all 5 drops.
Can you just give me like a taste, like just one?
Let's see. Drew, what do you think's the best one? You know?
I almost forget what happened last week.
I literally pissed my pants and forgot who the hell I am for the last 3 days.
That was a good one.
What was that reference to?
I don't remember.
I don't either.
He went after Vern. It was an interesting time.
Vern went around here for the longest time being a loser. He's lost all his damn hair, too, by the way, because of marriage.
He told Drew, he was talking about getting divorced, and Drew said, I'm married, Bink. And Bink said, well, for now you are. So then people wanted Bink to apologize to Drew for basically saying his marriage is going to end in divorce. It was a mess.
So somebody texted in and said, somebody said Bink was talking to somebody on the apps and that's no longer happening because she was their best friend and it's over because she did not like the way that Bink was, acting.
Yeah, we had a snitch line on Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
Bink snitched on us. He's blaming our show for him his relationship being over. He blamed our cameras. He wanted to know who set the cameras up. He was mad at you because because one day he was chewing on camera, and apparently the lady he was talking to, he didn't tell her he chewed. And so he was mad at us. We said, "Hey, Bink, you lied to her. That's why she broke up with you." It was a whole thing. Then he was making log jokes about the tobacco logs.
Somebody said Bink really, really, really hates Halloween. Oh, it turns out.
There was a lot. Yeah, he said it's just like Valentine's Day now. It's more about couples than kids. It was an interesting 2 days when you were gone while he filled in for you.
Mm-hmm. I will. I did see a lot of people complaining that, like, Halloween's not the same anymore. Like, trunk or treats are somehow ruined it. I don't know. It seemed like there were plenty of houses that were handing out candy.
Yeah. It's an additional thing. It doesn't ruin the actual trick or treat. It's an additional thing. The trunk or treat. In fact, it's a chance to get more candy if you're a kid.
Yeah. This was a win across the board. You could slowly spread out the candy getting over the course of time. But it sounded like it was an interesting... I might have to go back and listen to those shows.
Yeah.
There were
definitely some moments, Drew. That's a good way to describe it. Meanwhile, over the weekend, got some surprising news. Maybe not as surprising if you listened to the show Friday. And that was in regards to the Royals and their announcement that they're bringing back Michael Wacha on a new 3-year deal. We know he had an option to opt out if he wanted to, could get more money on the open market. When we had JJ Piccolo on weeks back, he was confident that they could get something done. That, hey, they knew Michael Wacha liked his time in Kansas City and that his family liked being in Kansas City. They felt confident. We played you the audio on Friday when George Brett was on the morning show with Fesco and Dusty. And George Brett then, that was on Friday, was like, I think he's coming back. Well, he knew something. and here we are, yesterday, the announcement that Michael Wacha is back on a 3-year, $51 million contract. Those numbers coming from Jeff Passan. The deal also includes another club option that could max out 4 years, $72 million.
With $1 million buyout to just say go away.
Here's where I'm at on the money real quick.
It's cheap.
They gave him an additional year that maybe another team wouldn't have to make him stay. Maybe that's true. But we had this very conversation a year ago when they handed out deals to Lugo and Wacha, and like, oh, you know, in a year or so, that might be, you know, that may not look good. Doesn't matter. They both performed at a high enough level. You're on a team now that just made the postseason. You're building off of that. You saw what this team is capable of doing. I'm not worried about what the third year when he's making, $18 million or whatever in the third year is going to be. I'm not concerned about that. This was about making sure that this rotation stays strong heading into next season, and it gives you some flexibility with what you can do with the rest. Because now you know that you have Seth Lugo, Cole Reagans, and Michael Wacha, 1, 2, 3, and as that for now, Brady Singer, 4. Okay, I feel pretty good about that again.
I mean, that worked last time.
It did, and even if you think there's regression coming, and there's, I think, a conversation to be had that there will be a little regression, perhaps, from Lugo or Wacha, although I think Wacha has kind of shown us we know what he is. Then you're looking at your fifth spot as multiple options now. Like, you're not trying to have multiple, you're not trying to figure out a fourth and a fifth. You're trying to figure out just your fifth starter, and you've got some candidates. Do you have
Bubich and Marsh and a million others?
Yeah, there's Lynch. A lot of options there. So I'm thrilled Michael Wacha is back.
I actually think that the thing I like about this is that it strengthens the bullpen for all the names we just mentioned. Daniel Lynch really worked well in the bullpen. Chris Bubich really worked well in the bullpen. From a financial end, it's pretty much peanuts. It doesn't even make him a top 50 paid pitcher, starting pitcher in Major League Baseball, right? I mean, it $14 million a year by baseball standards is nothing. That's what they were paying Gilmesh 20 years ago. So yeah, the number itself, the only question I was have is, does Michael Wacha have 3 middle rotation years left in the arm, right?
That's what I told you. We had this conversation. Does he have 2 left? There was a lot of people when they signed him last year that said, oh, in year 2, you may not want to be paying him $16 million or whatever because he's gonna be getting old. And now we were all dying for him to come back. So I get that he'll be obviously 3 years older in 3 years. But that year, I'm willing to stomach what that might look like in 2 years, Cody, or 3 years, because of what I just saw him do last year and because of where this organization is at.
Michael Wacha had 3 bad years in the middle of his run from 27 to 29, typically when starters are kind of dominating. He had a 4.76 ERA when he made 29 starts for St. Louis in his final year there. Rough year. He then got hurt, only pitched 7 starts and had a 6.5 ERA. He came back the year after injury and had a 5-point ERA. In the 3 years since, at age 30, 31, and 32, he has posted nearly identical numbers in each of those 3 years for three different major league teams. Boston, the Padres, and the Royals. 3.32, 3.22, 3.35 ERA. 23, 24, 27 starts. 102. I mean, they're identical.
You know what you're getting.
Identical. He is a middle-of-the-road starter. I will pay for a middle-of-the-road starter because they know. I think what people are missing in this is the Reagans-Lugo-Singer-Walker thing, you're right. The reason why it's important that the Royals do that to maintain their winning is they know, and you and I know, they need 2 to 3 years to buy their time to have their pitching development so that they can replace these guys.
Yep.
The system isn't there yet. The reason why they're paying this price is because the system is not capable of backfilling a Michael Walker yet. They got to buy themselves a few years. That's what they did. They got maybe 2 years on Lugo if he picks up his option, 3 years on Walker. They've got Cole Reagans under control for another four. Now, there's some arbitration here, but under control for another four. Brady Singer's got 2-3 years left of control. He's arbitration. Same thing. They could technically just keep the whole rotation together for years and buy themselves time to turn into the Rays of pitching development. They need time to do that.
And the other thing is we know they were really healthy in the rotation a year ago. Like not something that usually is going to happen consistently. Walker, actually, ironically enough, was the only starter, right? Like out of the 1-2-3 here we're talking about, that actually ended up on IL for a little bit last year. Brief stint. But Michael Walker
still made 29 starts.
And still made 29 starts. What I bring randomly up the health for one reason, that there's also a good chance next year that you don't stay as healthy in the rotation as you did a year ago. And so by bringing back Walker, it means that you mentioned depth. It means that you're not trying to potentially fill two spots. If one guy goes down, then you're talking about the grouping of Bubich, Wright, or Lynch, or if there's another veteran they go out and sign, or whoever, right? It's easier to cover for an injury than if all of a sudden you didn't bring back Walker, Singer's your three, then you're needing Kyle Wright to be your four or five, or Bubich, or they could go
or
out.
Or a different free agent.
Yeah, so this just gives them some more depth. Not only does it make 1-4 better, assuming Brady Singer, and we'll talk about him later, is still on this team, I think it does give them some options now with Brady Singer by making sure Walker's back. They have some flexibility with what they can do if the right situation were to arise in the offseason.
This is where it's hard. Like, if you're a Royals fan, how could you complain about this? The Royals, for an entire calendar year, had a top three rotation in all of baseball, and all they did was bring them all back. Like, that's rare in baseball. Typically, someone's got to go. Now, look, again, we can get back to Singer in a minute. Maybe something changes, but Lugo's back, Reagan's back. Currently, Singer's on. Like, they're all back. Walker was the guy who is kind of that weird keystone piece where he's not the best starter.
No, but he was their. You know what though? Post All Star break, he was their best starter. Post All Star break,
he's not. He was never over a calendar year. Whatever. He's never like. But he is solid as a rock. Something you just have to have in every qualified major league rotation that's going to be there. So immediately, I just assume that this is what the rotation is going into next year. Well, it's a playoff team. Like, I mean, even if some of them underperform a little gold, they're not all going to fall off the map. And then all they need is, I don't know, the bullpen to be a little bit better or the offense to be a little bit better to cover the gap for the rotation being slightly worse. That's it. That's all we're talking about. And when you add back in these pieces, the bullpen is strengthened because then you can just, I'll be honest, at this point, I'd borderline, I don't care which one, Bubich or Daniel Lynch should be full-time bullpen arms from the start of day one. Weaponize them from day one as maybe high-level, high-leverage bullpen arms because they were that for this team in the middle of a playoff hunt, and they continued to, not during the playoffs, they weren't that during the playoffs, but I didn't think they wanted to toss them or throw them to the Wolves in that situation versus rely on the two or three guys that had gotten them there.
Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, going to join us coming up at 11 o'clock. He's actually listening to the press conference or at the press conference right now. Michael Walker talking to some of the media about signing this three-year deal with Kansas City. I saw John Morosi, who was on MLB Hot Stove over the weekend as well. He said, quote, "I'm not sure how many teams can look at their rotation and have three better pitchers than what the Royals have. Some very good building blocks." That was his reaction to Michael Walker coming back on a three-year deal. And as we mentioned when we had J.J. Piccola on the show a couple weeks ago, this was their top priority in the offseason. And they went out, they felt confident they could get it done, and they did. Like that, I think that once again says a lot about this current front office, says a lot about John Sherman willing to go to that. Now, Does it mean that they're going to still spend a bunch of money the rest of the offseason? I have no idea. They also have some guys that are getting automatic raises as well. But Michael Wacha, it clearly wasn't, you know, just something he was saying to the media at the end of the season. He clearly, him and his family clearly liked their time in Kansas City. We say that all the time. We're obviously biased. We both grew up here. But, man, there's so many. I don't care if it's the NFL or baseball.
Borderline a record number of athletes who say that.
If you have a family, I think the key part, too. Like if you have kids and a family.
And you're like a normal person, right? You don't want the attention. You're just like kind of a run-of-the-mill dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, you're not looking for the limelight in LA. You're just like a regular dude.
I mean, we can give so many examples of guys that are not from here that signed a contract with the Royals or Chiefs at some point in their career that – have, you know, either had their kids while they were here or already had kids and moved here. And they're like, wow, this is like, I can give you a recent Drew Tranquil, same deal. Mm-hmm. Linebacker for the Chiefs. He loves Kansas City. Him and his wife love Kansas City. They're not from here. Obviously he was in LA before. I think Michael Wacha fits. There's countless examples of players that, you know, are pleasantly surprised with Kansas City, and everybody agrees it's a great place to raise your family. And Michael Wacha obviously feels the same. Not to mention the money doesn't hurt. He's getting a little more money too than what he was scheduled to get on the initial option.
Well, that's how that works. Got to give the man a raise so he doesn't go tempt free agency.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, they make sure he doesn't hit the open market. We'll talk more about this with Vern at 11 o'clock. Up next, though, what could happen with the trade deadline for the Chiefs? Who else could be coming to Kansas City on the football side of things? There's a report out there about who the Chiefs could be targeting. We'll tell you who that is.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Is next.
Text line told me not to go back and listen to Jay Binkley's show.
I mean, you can. Again, our shows are always podcasted. Drew always puts them up, what, hour by hour or segment by segment, I think, essentially, right?
Segment by segment at the end of the show.
End of the show.
And then I put down all the hours and then the full show as well. So
Odyssey app, check it out there if you want to go back.
I kind of want to hear it. It sounds kind of like it was unhinged.
There are definitely some moments where the title of the podcast is Bink is Unhinged, or the hour is Bink is Unhinged.
He had a good time. He had a good time filling in. So I appreciate him.
Isn't he filling in for you in a couple of weeks?
On a Friday here coming up in 2 weeks. My twin sister's wedding. So we got people coming in town. So I'm off on a Friday here coming up. So you'll see. We'll see if he's...
how many people are we thinking at this wedding? What's the energy here? Couple hundred?
That's above my, like, I don't know the exact number.
Wow.
No, I mean, like, I'm obviously not involved. I think 100 and something. I'm not sure the exact number. Low hundreds, I think. Like,
not like 300. No. I've been to one wedding that size. No.
I know it's not that. I think it's in the hundreds, and I think it's on the lower end of the hundreds. But no, it's not. I got to finalize the speech. I got to give a little speech at the rehearsal dinner here coming up.
Well, you got to give a speech at the rehearsal dinner?
Not at the wedding.
I mean, you are a twin. You should probably say something.
Not at the wedding, but a rehearsal dinner. I got short and sweet at the dinner. We'll be good.
You've already written it?
I know my intro and outro. Like, I know how I'm starting and I know how I'm ending it. I just got to work on the
beat.
Can
we get a taste?
No.
Can we get a little? No. Like, next week, can we get like first 10
honestly,
seconds?
Cannot do that. Cannot do that.
Huh. I just figure, you know, we could help advise.
I mean, I'll take your tip. I won't say what I have. I'll take your advice. You know, when we get a little bit closer, I'll take your advice if you guys have any suggestions. But I know the icebreaker, if you will, at the beginning, and I know how I'm wrapping it up.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, let's
give Alex advice. 913-586-7965.
Let's talk about what could happen tomorrow afternoon, though, because maybe tonight does play a role into this. And tomorrow's the trade deadline, for those that don't know, in the NFL. And Diana Rossini over at The Athletic had some interesting tidbits, but doesn't mean these are going to happen, but I think gave Chiefs fans a little bit of hope and maybe some excitement about perhaps continuing how aggressive Brett Veach is going to be. Quote, this was from a report, quote, "The Chiefs still may not be done. If a wide receiver falls into their laps, I'm told they're going to try to land another one with Sky Moore on injured reserves." There is also more to that. Quote, defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo would love for Veach to get him a young, fast corner. Kansas City is trying to land the final pieces on its mission to a three-peat. That is from Diana Rossini. And yeah, that should excite you as a Chiefs fan to hear that it's not just about DeAndre Hopkins. They recognize they're in a unique spot. And if they, I read that as if they can make another move for a conditional sixth, seventh round type of pick, they'll pull the trigger on it. I don't think you should expect them to give up a third or anything like that. And honestly, at this point, I don't really think they should. But if there's a cornerback or another receiver that's available for a future, like a 2026 seventh round pick, sign me up again. I'm good with that.
I would say, okay, one, I kind of want them to make the move now because the fact that they're kicking this around, this has been the most prognosticating. All the rumors around the Chiefs have been to this point. The rumors were Chiefs are going to wide receiver. And then, oh, here you go. Here shows one up, right? There you go. And then it was like, well, you know, Chiefs are looking for, you know, pass rusher. They do want a pass rusher. There it is. And now I'm seeing rumors that they want either another wide receiver or another corner to go with the mix. Then I'm all the way in. Corner is probably the position I would sell for. Like, that's the one that I would give up the greater value for. Marshon Lattimore is old, though. Like, for him to be the name that's kicked around. And look, Dennis Allen just got his ass fired this morning.
Yeah, same.
So I'm going to guess more so than even 12 hours ago, Marshon Lattimore is available more than he was 12, 14, 15 hours ago, whatever, before they lost their seventh straight game or whatever the hell it
was.
Remember
when they were 2-0 and had the number one offense in football? Those were the good days for them, huh? Crazy.
Before they faced the Chiefs, were they 2-0 when they faced the Chiefs? No, 2-1, 2-2.
They had lost a couple already.
Clint Kubiak was a head coaching candidate.
Oh, dude, like people were sending out the stats about how the Bears bombed it with Eberflus. I still think they bombed it with Eberflus, but how they should have gotten Kubiak instead of Shane Waldron as their OC, because apparently they interviewed him. Yeah, I remember how bleak it was. I think they should probably get a corner. I'm not nervous about it, but the Nazi Johnson one is like, all right, it's enough water that if there's a seventh round guy for some depth, some competition, I think getting it now means to me that Spag can turn that guy into a quality level player by the time the postseason hits.
I'm glad to hear that you're okay. You've come around on this because we talked about this.
I'm not desperate. I'm not, but like, yeah, okay, get a corner.
Because we talked about this last week, and understandably so, you said, hey, I just have faith that they're going to continue to develop the in-house guys because Dave Merritt's done a great job in Spag's head. And I was like, okay, that makes sense to me. Now it sounds like you're a little more willing. I told you I don't need them, and it sounds like the young, fast corner. I don't need a guy that's going to start opposite Trent McDuffie right away. I just think they need depth. So if it's somebody on an expiring contract, or if it's just a player that for whatever reason hasn't fit in with somebody else's scheme and you can get them for a future draft pick, I'm kind of interested. Marshon Lattimore would be fun, but also I haven't looked at the latest prorated salary amount for him. Like I don't, is that really financially realistic for this organization to go out and make a trade like that? There's also going to be some more competition for that. Lattimore is expensive. If I remember right, here's where we're at. Okay, so prorated. Remember, we're halfway
like
through
$100 million deal. So yes.
$14 million cap hit, $14.6 million this year. It's less than that because we're heading into week 11. Of the NFL season. So it's not $14 million. It's probably half of that. But that's still a lot. Then next year, when he'll be 29, so he'll still be on the right side of 30, but it'll be 29. If you cut him, it's $20 million dead cap or $31 million on the cap next year. Unless they knew they could rework something, there is no way I think he's a candidate, Cody. How on earth are they? They're not paying a corner $31 million next year at age 29. No way.
They'd have to extend it out. Not extend it, but rework the deal for next year's contract cap number. I will say, the only benefit to this is the Saints are so screwed in the salary cap that any amount of salary you take off of their hands in this boat is going to mean Marshon Lattimore is not going to cost that much to trade for. Like if
not compensation wise, yes. But the salary cost. is an issue.
Yes.
And they have some void on his contract. They already have a couple void years on the back end of it. So I don't know how flexible that deal is. I think, you know, can you find somebody that just provides some depth for a sixth, seventh round pick in the future?
I think it's just so hard because the deeper and deeper we get into an undefeated season where the two-time defending Super Bowl champ, the more I am willing to sell my soul, you know, like more and more where I'm like, screw the future. I don't care about anything after tomorrow. If like, the later we get into this, it's like, I'm not fully there yet. It's still like a balance between yes, definitely buy into this year, but also you got Mahomes and Andy Reid. So let's play the long game for as many Super Bowls as you can get. But I mean, at some point, they win this week, golden, the trade deadline's tomorrow. They'll be 9-0. They'll have a 2-game lead on anyone in the AFC, a three game lead on anyone, but Buffalo, a team they face in a couple of weeks and a trade deadline sitting in front of you. It is going to be hard to not want to buy one more time. for just one more play.
Yeah, if they win tonight, they'll be 8-0. Lattimore,
wide
yeah.
receiver, something. And the wide receiver stuff might change because what we'll talk about later in the show with tight ends, where those guys weren't catching passes, but it was fundamentally how they operated as an offense. So I'm very interested in being active one more time. Just one more time.
I think there's a chance that, you know, everybody, I'll go back to Nate Taylor, who will join us tomorrow. But when he joined us last week, we asked him, are they done? And he's like, look, they're willing to go make a move. It doesn't mean they'll actually accomplish that task. I think it's very clear. There's way too much noise. They are interested in making another move. As we all know, it doesn't mean that the deal ultimately comes together. But I think anybody worried that like they're not actively searching for another wide receiver, or another corner, you shouldn't be worried about that. They clearly are interested, and they clearly are willing to trade away an asset if needed to make it happen. We'll see if it comes together. There's a ton of factors, financial. You're also competing with other teams that could use some help at corner, that can use some other wide receiver help. And based off of how teams have performed this week, you know, you and I talked about the Rams situation a week or so ago. They're tied basically or a half game back of the division lead now. They're hot. The Rams are a hot football team right now. They're playing good. They're healthy again, even though Puka got ejected from the game yesterday. Those of you in fantasy football, I'm sure, love that. He finally plays in another game, and he gets ejected in the second quarter. by those, I'm talking about myself. That was ridiculous. So we'll see. I don't think the Rams are trading. Well, I guess what I'm getting at is I don't think the Rams are trading to Marcus Robinson anymore, who also had the game-winning touchdown catch in overtime last night.
D-Rob's having a career year. Career year.
Maybe they would trade a 2-2 Atwell type or something, but I don't think D-Rob's getting traded. Darius Slayton continues to perform well for the Giants. They stink. I could see Darius Slayton being on the market still. Adam Thielen still could be on the market for the Panthers. Those are the kind of players. That's about it, man, in terms of wide receivers that I think are truly available.
Good for DeMarcus Robinson. 327 yards and 5 touchdowns. I mean, that's by far. I mean, his career year in Kansas City was 406. That was his best year. 466 yards. This is already a career high in touchdowns for him, which is crazy.
But he's going to end up having a great career. But
like the thing with the reason why people predicted DeMarcus Robinson is the Rams had wide receivers 3, 4, 5, 6, and they all seem like the same quality. And it was like, well, who the hell are you going to use out of this? And for the Chiefs, it was like, well, D-Rob's played here, so him. The Rams have clearly settled into D-Rob as the 3. So, like, if you're getting somebody off the Rams roster, it's not DeMarcus Robinson.
Yeah, it's 2-2 Atwell. What is the young kid? Tyler Johnson. You know, it's somebody like that. That you would get. I don't believe they're trading.
That's why I'm just so fascinated in DeAndre Hopkins night to night. I just want to see where they are. It's another test. I know that they're undefeated. I know that they're a really good team. Where are you at wide receiver? Juju maybe comes back in a week or two. Cool. That sounds good. Where are you at right now with DeAndre Hopkins as your 1 versus what you had before the start of the season and Rashee Rice as your 1 and everything in between there? The Michael Walker deal was interesting. We're going to talk to Vern here in about 15 minutes, get his opinion on it. We talked about whether or not it financially made sense for the Royals. You and I both agree, makes sense to keep the rotation together. What does this mean for Brady Singer? I mean, it certainly renegotiates. It reopens the thing that people have been guessing for a full year, which is Brady Singer, trade candidate in the offseason. I actually think the only thing it eliminated is an extension. I think they could just play out the arbitration years and just let Brady Singer be a starter here, making no money. For all those years, I think that they could trade him and acquire assets like a leadoff hitter or a corner outfielder, but I just don't think he's getting an extension anymore. They've committed their dollars elsewhere.
Yeah, part of the reason why I liked bringing Walker back is you have just about every single option, you know, out there still for Brady Singer. If you choose to bring him back and not move on from him, and again, reminder, he is under contract, so it's not even bring him back. Just if you just continue to go status quo, I should say, with Brady Singer, great. He's your 4th starter heading into the season. There were flashes again last year of why you were excited about Brady Singer. Why not? Why not? You know, and he, to me, still would also give you flexibility in season. You know, if the season goes the way you hope it goes, this doesn't happen. But if the season ends up not going the way you want, he's also a guy mid-season next year that you would have some flexibility to maybe look. I think if they were to trade him at all this offseason, to me, he wouldn't be a solo trade. He would be packaged together with a player or two that could then bring back a corner outfielder or a leadoff hitter.
A middle of the order guy.
Something like that. But that's the Michael Walker deal just gives you so much flexibility. I love this because now it doesn't eliminate. If they didn't bring back Walker, then we'd be saying, well, no, they have to keep Brady Singer. Like, have to, because otherwise you're going to get really thin with your rotation. But as John Morosi said, you look at their rotation of Reagans and Lugo and Walker and Singer, and certainly the first 3 names mentioned there, but I'll include Singer in that. What other team, certainly in the AL, and I know not in the AL Central, has a 1-4 like that? It's kind of what we said this year, why they were dangerous if they got to the playoffs. And in the Orioles series, we saw the pitching and why it was exactly what we were expecting. They didn't have any offense in the Orioles series. Didn't matter because the starting pitching and bullpen also turned out to be great. I don't know about you guys. I'm excited about the bullpen heading into next season, too. That's the difference. There were some guys that flashed at the end of last season that really helped the bullpen. Let's not forget Hunter Harvey. I know we were disappointed this year. I still think he's going to be a big factor in 2025.
Yeah, I mean, he'll be a part of the core end of the back end of the rotation, which now could be Bubich and Lynch and Urseg and Harvey. And, you know, like they've got some, and, you know, they've got some pieces that they like. I think my play, if you said, hey, what do you want to do as Singer? And we'll ask Vern here in a minute because I'm curious. I'd hold him hostage. This is one of the few times in baseball where you do not have to act quick. And as I told you before, I still think they need years on pitching development. They have Brady Singer under control for 3 more seasons. He's not a free agent until after 2027. So he has tremendous value on the open market. I'll just tell you that. Because teams will look at a career 4 earned run average coming off a 3.71 season and a career high in starts, innings, strikeouts, and every other metric you possibly want to imagine at 27 years old when pitchers peak all the time, 27, 28, 29, 30, of 3 years of team control, he is an incredible asset if you want to move him. But you could just move him next year. Keep the rotation together. Keep the roster together. Prove that you can make a playoff in a back-to-back season where you got a generational superstar in Bobby Wood Jr. who just won a gold glove last night to go with his 30-30-30 season that he already put in the books. Run it back one more season, and then when the arbitration number jumps up again, then make your decision. For this year, I'm holding on to Singer. He's just going to have to make the arbitration number of $4, $5, $6 million, and we all live our life. You get a raise. We're happy you're still here. The only hesitation I have is versus the other guys. We just mentioned Waka. Does Singer ever seem like he wanted to stay here forever? Do you ever get that energy from him? I can't ever tell with him.
And baseball, in baseball, that is not something, especially in Kansas City, that I think
never sure
is in play as much. Like, look, Michael Waka was re-signing with Kansas City because, one, the money is right, but also he loved his time in Kansas City, as we said. That's why Waka's back. His family liked Kansas City. That's why it made sense for him to re-sign with the Royals. Yeah. But in general, in terms of homegrown guys and retaining, usually with the Royals, it never comes down to, like, wanting to stay here. It usually, with homegrown guys, is the money.
Yeah,
and whether or not you can re-signability, essentially, re-signability is the question. So I don't think so. I mean, I know that's always been brought up, like, with Brady, that to me, when you have as much control as they have, that doesn't really matter. Like if you don't want to be here for 3 or 4 more years, then like, what are you going to do in baseball? You don't like see for a player of his stature. There's no like request a trade. That's the stuff we worry about. You're a Juan Soto type, is like, does he want to be a Yankee still or not? Someone's going to give him $600 million this offseason.
You want to be here or no?
You know, that it's a little bit different where like he better want to be in said market or whatever.
Yeah. There's never a hometown discount. I guess it's just like his commitment to his problem is that he spent 4 years in Kansas City where they were a loser. They traded away his best friend. Let's be honest, you know, like in Whit Merrifield. And this is an organization that his net didn't fully commit to him as a starter a couple of different times, right? Where they were like, they made him a starter, but they're like, bullpen, maybe not. We'll see. They wavered, not a ton, but they wavered a little on him. I just think it makes sense. 3 more years, he's still valuable. 2 years of control next year. He's still valuable to all these teams a year from now. Why am I selling now? And I get it. You can be like, rob Peter to pay Paul. Screw that. They're good because of their rotation. Stay good because
they are. They are. The only argument, of course, is just if, and we don't know the answer to this because we're not in the room of how much money does JJ Piccolo maybe have to work with this year.
Yeah, we don't know.
Well, generally speaking, though, if the only way to acquire a leadoff bat or to acquire an outfield bat, if you're telling me that the only way to do that, and I don't
is
know
to if not
that,
just pay for it on the open market, but
is to package a trade that requires him, then of course I'm open to that. I don't know if that's reality, but if you told me that was a scenario, I could go and actually get a leadoff bat that makes sense, or, you know, corner outfielder, and he has to be involved in a trade to pull that off, I would totally be open to that. I don't think you should flat out say, nope, can't do it. He's not a guy you're like, can't move him. No, that's not where he's at. But also, hey, if I can acquire in other areas, or if that trade doesn't exist, well, then yeah, I have no interest in moving on from if it's not going to equate to something like that.
Is part of the reason you feel that way is because over the last 2 years, the Royals have proven that they are decent at finding pitching again? Like, because that does give me a little more confidence. They're pretty good at it. They've been finding some guys
at the big league level. They found, you know, at the pro level, they've been great in scouting that. The question will be long-term development in the minors, but they have done a really nice job, whether it's bullpen acquisition via trade. We all know about Cole Reagans, of course, as well. They've done a great job of evaluating other big league clubs, big league talent, if that makes sense. That's where they've thrived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, finding guys who are already established. But, you know, they get credit for Singer. Like, they don't get credit for many because all those guys. And look, sometimes the Bubich, Daniel Lynch's of the world become good bullpen arms, and you get credit for that too. The whole thing is like, by the way, out of those two guys, Bubich should start next year, shouldn't he? I mean, Bubich should be a starter. I saw enough out of Bubich to be like, I'll take one more crack at that one.
I think that depends on A, are they going outside the organization and getting another free agent, or what's Kyle Wright look like? It's remember, he's coming right off of an injury just like Bubich. Is it the reverse where Bubich is in the rotation? Kyle Wright's the guy that ends up helping them more in the bullpen. I don't know. We're going to have to wait till spring to get to that. We'll ask Vern this question. Vern, I'm told, is going to join us in studio too. So we'll get an in studio Vern in the offseason.
Josh Vern.
It's too early to call it hot stove, right? But I kind of, you know, it's colder outside. It's rainy. We already, you know,
warm
moved
stuff.
The clocks back, which sucked, by the way. Dark at 5:05. Ugh. So it might as well be hot stove.
You get a little seasonal depression disorder?
I just don't like it, man. Yeah, it sucks being dark at 5.
Depression.
Now, for you and I, at least, we're off at 2. So it's not like we're going home and it's dark. For some of you, a lot of you, a majority of you, I should say, you're driving home in the dark. That sucks. That just sucks. So yes, I don't like it. Spring forward.
My whole thing is
just get rid of it.
Stuff.
Can we just get rid of the daylight saving? We don't need it. Get rid of it. I guess now we're on the right. We're now on the normal time.
Yesterday,
isn't that right?
At 7 p.m., it felt like it might have as well been 10 o'clock.
Oh yeah, could have gone to bed at 8 o'clock last night.
Yeah,
totally could have gone to bed at 8 o'clock last night.
I would prefer that we didn't switch the clocks, but also like that's maybe kid related. They don't know. They don't know that we've sprung.
Kids need the daylight.
Back.
They don't need dark at 5. The kids need more light in the evening, you know?
So they're not playing outside in the evening when it's, well,
no,
it's been
cold.
Unseasonably warm.
Yeah. We'll get back to baseball here in 8 minutes with Vern. Did you guys see two things that happened yesterday? One involving a former, or at least ties to Kansas City, I should say, and one involving a former local college basketball player. Starting with Joel Embiid. So he got in a fight with a reporter.
A lot of athlete fights this weekend.
Then former Philadelphia Eagle Jason Kelce was at the Penn State Ohio State game. Biggest game of the college football weekend. Ohio State ends up winning that one. Before the game, Jason Kelce, he's on video. He's carrying around his garage beer, right? That's the brand him and Travis have. And somebody's clearly shouting and getting up kind of in his face with the phone.
And yelling hate speech.
Yeah. Basically a homophobic slur about his brother. Like, hey, Travis is a blank. Okay. What do you make of that? And so he turns around and he grabs the phone and he slams it. We've all seen the video. And I got no problem with it, man. I got no problem with it whatsoever.
Actions have consequences.
Yeah. That kid's lucky. I'm glad it didn't get to this part. That kid's lucky though, that he didn't get his ass beat.
I'll just be honest with you. The internet. And I'm like, I get it. I'm of the internet age. I don't remember a time fundamentally past middle school in which I didn't have regular access to these things. The internet has made people online think that they can say tough guy stuff.
That's right.
To, as a non-tough guy, to 6'3", 280-pound tough guys. And I would just tell you, that's a bad decision. I would not talk trash to a former NFL player saying derogatory hate speech about his sibling in a public forum. I'm glad he smashed that guy's phone. Because the other one you're mentioning is Joel Embiid, where the reporter mentioned his dead brother.
Yeah, there's a column from a reporter.
And his kid in a column. And eventually Joel Embiid did not like that. It turns out some of the things you say, including what we say, right? I said I would fight Bill Romanowski. If I ever have to face him face to face, I'm going to have to wear that. But, like, I don't know. It just made people feel like they're too tough. I don't care. I wouldn't bother by either.
Would you say it to him face-to-face, then?
Only one way to find out, you know?
Yeah, I just think, you know, you're 100% right with, I think a lot of it does have to do with online social media, that, you know, people can hide behind whatever random, you know, Twitter account or Facebook account or anything like that, and they'll say whatever they want, and there's no consequence to that. Maybe they get banned from the platform. Nowadays they won't even do that, so you can do whatever the hell you want on there. And so the fact is, when it's some 19 or 20 year old kid that's probably also been drinking himself, He's gonna. He just thinks there's no consequences whatsoever. So yeah, I'm glad that Jason Kelce didn't actually get into a physical confrontation. Big deal. Buy him a phone. It's more big deal. But he stood up for his brother. I think most people understand that situation and respect that. And you know, it's hopefully a wake up call to that kid also in a way. Like, hey, you got a wake up call without getting your ass kicked, because there will be some other college kid if you say something that too. That will have no restraint.
Oh, I feel like in both instances, the athletes are I think should be commended for how they handled it, because it could have gone further.
It's tough for me because he's in the locker room. Maybe you don't shove a guy there.
Yeah, but I think too the background on it with Joel, it makes sense why he was heated. And Joel even said if you do it again.
Yeah, quote,
I'm going to deal with the consequences.
So there's a Philadelphia Inquirer columnist, Marcus Hayes. Marcus Hayes mentioned Embiid's son and late brother, both named Arthur, while questioning Embiid's professionalism, trying to stay in shape and all that, which has been an issue for Embiid throughout his career. And Embiid responded, quote, "The next time you bring up my dead brother and my son again, you're going to see what I'm going to do to you, and I'm going to have to live with the consequences." He continued with profanity. Hayes offered an apology, which Embiid did not want. "That's not the effing first time," Embiid said. So they've had it. That reporter relationship obviously hasn't been good for a while. That whole scenario is much different than Jason Kelce, where he's just there as a fan on his own. Yeah. And people are, this one person, I should say, is trying to get in his face and obviously saying terrible things about his brother.
Most of them will allow you to question things that exist on the field.
Yeah.
But if you start questioning, this is the same thing. I wouldn't question Patrick Mahomes' performance this season related to like his wife. Like, you just leave that stuff out of it.
Yeah.
There's no bearing here. Leave his brother out of this, and he's not going to come at you that way.
Up next, Josh Fournier, our Royals insider, joins us in studio. We'll talk about Michael Wacha's extension. And yeah, what are the repercussions from that? What does it mean for Brady Singer? What does it mean for other moves? That's coming up next.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season, but this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.